Translation and Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Yeah. Translation. O personality of religion, I was greatly overburdened by the undue military phalanxes arranged by the atheistic kings, and I was relieved by the grace of the personality of Godhead. Similarly, you were also in a distressed condition, weakened in your standing strength, and thus he also incarnated by his internal energy in the family of the Yadus to relieve you. Please repeat. O personality of religion, I was greatly overburdened by the undue military phalanxes arranged by the atheistic kings, and I was relieved by the grace of the personality of Godhead. Similarly, you were also in a distressed condition, weakened in your standing strength, and thus he also incarnated by his internal energy in the family of the Yadus to relieve you. Purport. The Asuras want to enjoy a life of sense gratification, even at the cost of others' happiness. In order to fulfill this ambition, the Asuras, especially atheistic kings or state executive heads, try to equip themselves with all kinds of deadly weapons to bring about a war in a peaceful society. They have no ambition other than personal aggrandizement, and thus Mother Earth feels overburdened by such undue increases of military strength. By increase of the Asuric population, those who follow the principles of religion become unhappy, especially the devotees or devas. In such a situation, the personality of Godhead incarnates to vanquish the unwanted Asuras and to re-establish the true principles of religion. This was the mission of Lord Sri Krishna, and he fulfilled it. Srila Prabhupada ki. Om Gyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Salakayam Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Nama Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Miti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Vaschatya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So, I would like to ask for permission and blessings of all the devotees to speak on Srimad Bhagavatam, as without the blessings of Vaishnavas, nothing is actually possible. Please accept my humble obeisances. Vancha kaupaturupyascha kripa sindubhya evacha patitanam pavinebhyo Vaishnavabhyo namo namaha anantakoti Vaishnava vrindaki. Hare Krishna. So, thank you for allowing me to sit on the Vyasasana and represent the Guru Parampara, even if I'm not eligible. Nevertheless, it's instruction from me, from my spiritual master, so I'll try to do it in my best ability. It's interesting that in this section, in this chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a whole kind of a scene is being described. How Maharaj Parikshit took his arms, took forces, and just was ready to strike a blow into the personality of Kali, in the age of Kali. And this specific verse is speaking about, actually it's a glorification of the Lord. If you look at the translation, Prabhupada translates that, O personality of religion, I was greatly overburdened. So there's a problem. There was a situation when so many millions and millions of soldiers been marching from one end of a continent to another, and they've been fighting with all these swords and brahmastras and all these celestial weapons, and somehow or another they've been a great burden to me. And then similarly, you Dharma personified, you are also being in a troublesome position. Weakened understanding strength, and thus also the Lord helped by incarnating himself in the Yaduvamsa family, and he helped you by re-establishing the principles of religion, as Krishna promised in the Bhagavad Gita. So I was thinking about how to bring this kind of a comparison of those ancient days to a modern society, what's happening today and what used to happen before. So it is mentioned Asura Vamsa Ragnam. So Asura means someone who's of demoniac nature. Vamsa in general is translated as like those which are associating with, or those which are of certain nature. So Vamsa is also sometimes like you have these Advaita Vamsas and Nityananda Vamsas. I mean, they refer to the like a family lineage of Nityananda and Advaita. And Ragnam refers to the kings, as mentioned. So those which are on a family with those asuras and those which are kings, they bring a lot of havoc in the society. In a modern day, you don't have to be in a lineage of Asuric kings to have these Asuric propensities. Because the age of Kali spread very wide, a lot of personalities and a lot of people have these Asuric qualities. So one thing which I would like to speak on today is actually find the point of connection between the Asuras and Devas, or basically those which are devotees and non-devotees. What if I make a statement that devotees and Asuras are the same? Oppose me someone. So what would you say to it? Is it truth that the demons and suras or demigods are on the same level, are the same? What would you say, Rasaraj Krishna Prabhu? Yes. Yes and no. Yes in which form? Maybe you can get a mic.
Because they're both children of Krishna.
Both children of Krishna, okay.
And no, because the intention is different.
Okay, yes, thank you. Any other points? Roberto Prabhu?
Krishna sees the Asuric hostility and the presence of devotees on the same level. Mm. And so in this regard, but he reciprocates differently, but at least he looks at it the same level.
Mm. Okay, thank you. The one point which the angle which I look at was that it is mentioned here, in the order to fulfill this ambition, the Asuras, especially atheistic kings, or state executive, try to equip themselves with all kinds of deadly weapons. And he said that their ambition is personal aggrandizement. So in other words, Asuras want to be happy. The demon-like personalities, they want to be happy. The same thing with the Vaishnavas, you want to be happy as well. So this angle of vision is that we are on the same level. Everyone wants to be happy in this material world. The good thing about the Vaishnavas is they know the true nature of happiness. And what does a true happiness mean? So it is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita in the 16th chapter, which deals with Asuric mentality, that the Asuras, they're looking for exploitation, and they're eager to actually take the happiness of others just to enrich themselves. On the other hand, a devotee, he's actually ready to do the opposite thing. He's ready to take his happiness away from him, but to enrich the lives of others. For those of you who've been on book distribution, who've done Sankirtan, or Harinam, or any other welfare activity for others, you know that this is sometimes a very difficult activity to perform, right? You know, it's raining, it's windy, it's snowing, people are not so polite as in the temple. But what we do is we take that austerity to bring Krishna consciousness to others, right? And that is not based on some kind of a mental concoction, but rather is based on true understanding of the nature of the soul, right? So you want to be happy, I want to be happy. Why? Because the soul is pleasure seeking in nature. So anything and everything you do in your life is actually with this in the background. You want to have pleasure in your life. And pleasure takes many forms, for many different people, for many different species of life, based on many different types of consciousness. So ask yourself this. Where do you take your happiness from? And this is the answer you will have is the answer of level of your consciousness, where your happiness is based. It's an interesting question, and it gives you a lot of opportunity to introspect where your happiness lies. And if you answer this correctly to your own ability, you will actually find your level of your advancement. So Prabhupada writes, the demons have no satiation for their lust. They will go on increasing and increasing their insatiable desires for material enjoyment. Although they are always full of anxieties on account of accepting non-permanent things, they still continue to engage in such activities out of illusion. They have no knowledge and cannot tell that they are heading the wrong way. Accepting non-permanent things, such demoniac people create their own god, create their own hymns and chant accordingly. This is purport from Bhagavad Gita 16 and verse number 10. So it is said that these demon-like personalities, they take, same time in the month of Karthik, what we do, we take vratas, right? You take vows. You say that, oh Krishna, I will do this, I will not do this, I will not do this. I will take extra austerities, I will chant extra rounds. I will perform Shishi Radha Gokulananda ki, Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki, Shishi Gonitai ki, Yashoda Damodara ki. But one thing is for certain, and Prabhupada explains in this verse, that actually the demons also take vratas. They also take vows. Their vows are something called asuchi vrata. Asuchi means unclean vows. So these unclean vows are many times connected to the opposite of vows that we take in a day or a time of our initiation, right? No illicit connection, no intoxication, no gambling, and no meat eating. The asuras are giving completely opposite vows. They say, I will intoxicate as much as I can. I will indulge in meat eating as much as I can. Gambling is my most favorite activity. So all these asuchi vows, what they bring is asuchi mentality, asuchi lifestyle, asuchi consciousness. But nevertheless, their consciousness is still pleasure seeking. So we always have a choice. One choice is that you have to develop taste. Taste has to be there. But you always have a choice for what kind of a thing you dovetail your taste. Is going to be low taste or high taste, right? But taste or some kind of a sense gratification has to be there. Taste is based on the consciousness and attraction of different personalities. Again and again, we always recite or we always mention that Six Goswamis of Vrindavan and our acharyas. Yesterday we had appearance of Gaurakishwara's Babaji. And you can see that his taste was based on completely different platform, on a spiritual platform. And it's not cheap to attain such a taste. In the mentality of the suras or the demigods, Prabhupada says, fearlessness, purification of one's existence, cultivation of spiritual knowledge, charity, self-control, performance of sacrifice, truthfulness, freedom from anger, renunciation, tranquility, compassion, gentleness, modesty, steady determination, and so on. These are the internal characteristics of those which are of demigod-like mentality, those which have demigod-like mentality, or basically devotees. So these activities are bringing the higher taste. They're not so tangible. You can't really see them, but you can actually perceive them, feel them, and taste them. Cleanliness, freedom from envy, from passion and honor. These are all transcendental qualities. So the real taste comes from renunciation. If you say to someone who's of ascetic mentality that you have to renounce the activities which brings you pleasure, they will go completely mad. But for a devotee, if you ask him, request him to please renounce this because today is Ekadashi, or don't do this activity because Krishna appeared, or don't take breakfast because it's appearance of Acharya, Vaishnavas are eager to accept these sort of renunciations. Why? Because they understand that's an opportunity for higher taste, for even greater pleasure. So intelligence actually means understanding what is good for you and what is bad for you. Simple as that. Accepting and rejecting. But true intelligence has to be purified intelligence. And this purified spiritual intelligence will actually invoke an opportunity to have higher seeking pleasure mentality. Prabhupada said many times that actually I created this movement for enjoyment, for pleasure. These materialists, they actually don't know how to have a true enjoyment in their life. They don't know. They think that these non-permanent things, they will bring them pleasure. But what you have to do, you have to do it again and again and again and again until you come to the point when you actually destroy your mind and you destroy your body. You destroy your society. You destroy the world. So look at the consequences of different types of enjoyment. Right? What spiritual enjoyment brings? Tell me one negativity of spiritual enjoyment. Tell me one side effect of spiritual enjoyment which actually disturbs others. Yeah, Sankirtan sometimes, yeah, when you sing on the streets, when you do Harinam, people might be sometimes agitated, but that's a good agitation. Anything? What is the side effect of spiritual enjoyment for a devotee? There's none. So every activity, every spiritual activity a sadhaka performs, there's no side effect to the society or for no one else. There's always a benefit. On the other hand, for the materialist to practice their enjoyment, their material enjoyment, thousands of side effects, thousands of problems. Because this country wants to be powerful, maintain their power, they create nuclear weapons. These nuclear weapons have to fall somewhere. Therefore, this person will be victorious and this person will be defeated. You want to enjoy some sense gratification, let's say some intoxication, right? They do a lot of beverages out of fruits. These fruits could be wonderfully prepared and offered to the Lord. What they do this process of, how do you call it, distillation, and you know, some liquid comes which actually just creates havoc in the society and in your brain. How many things are going wrong when people want to enjoy like liquor? How many things go wrong? So many social problems. But we're not here today to discuss these problems. We're here today to actually see that true enjoyment has no stain on the society and on the people. There's only positivity, only spiritual benefit for others and for everyone. This is the beauty of those which are following the path of Krishna consciousness. So the second point, the first point was that the asuras and devas are in nature pleasure seeking. And this, think about this. This pleasure seeking mentality is one of the very, very small things that in material and spiritual nature are always the same. It's always the same. The desire to enjoy is both in the spiritual world and in the material world. Always is present. Pleasure-seeking mentality is always present. If you're spiritually liberated or you're materially entangled, you're always seeking for pleasure. So this platform we have always the same. But it's just misguided. On the spiritual level, it's a pure enjoyment, pure spiritual enjoyment. On the material platform, it's contaminated material enjoyment. The next point is the external versus internal conquest and achievement of happiness. How do you actually achieve this happiness? So Prabhupada writes in the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, verse number 2, Raja Vidya Rajaguhyam Pavitramidam Uttamam Pratyakshavagamam Dharmam Susukam Kartum Avyayam. Prabhupada writes in the purport, generally people are not educated in this confidential knowledge. They are educated in external knowledge. As far as ordinary education is concerned, people are involved with so many departments: politics, sociology, physics, chemistry, mathematics, astronomy, engineering. There are so many departments of knowledge all over the world and many huge universities, but there is, unfortunately, no university for educational institution where the science of the spiritual is instructed. In the verse 5:24 in the Bhagavad Gita, he said, "One whose happiness is within, who is active and rejoices within, and whose aim is inward and is actually the perfect mystic, he is liberated in the Supreme, and ultimately he attains the Supreme." So the external happiness of materialists, that it always aims outside. How can I change this? How can I understand this? How can I create such a situation that I'll be happy? So materialists, what they do, they always want to bend the reality, the materialistic reality. They want to adjust the matrix for them. They want to adjust everything externally so they can be happy, seemingly happy. So what they say is, if I change my situation like this, if I have more money, a bigger car, you know, or a bigger house, or more land, more workers, bigger company, then I will be happy. Look at Hiranyakashipu. He said, he was altruist, right? He wanted to help others. If you look at it, he was a good guy, right? He wanted to build a staircase to heaven. You know that song? What was it? Led Zeppelin. I don't remember. He wanted to build staircase to heaven. Was it Ravana?
Yeah.
So sorry, Ravana. He wanted to build staircase to heaven. Good guy, no? He wanted to get everyone to get celestial enjoyment. Not really possible. So what materialists are doing, even if they want to be a good people, so-called good personalities, and help others, they always try to adjust material nature. They always want to adjust material circumstances. But let me tell you one thing. There will be never good material circumstances. Never. You could be the most poverty-stricken person or the most wealthiest of people in the world. There will be never a good circumstances. But for a spiritualist, what he does, he just adjusts internal lifestyle and everything externally is okay. Everything will be fine. Right? Rather than dealing with problems of other people, how other people are treating you, how the society is treating you, why don't you deal with yourself first? That's what Bhagavad Gita is doing. Bhagavad Gita is a journey of Arjuna, who was in the beginning in a distressed condition. I want to renounce. I don't want to fight. My family will be, I will kill my own family. The world will be in the difficulties. All the senior personalities of these great families, these great kings will die. I'm going to renounce everything. And Krishna adjusted his internal vision. So the same thing, the process of Krishna consciousness is about adjustment. Not external adjustment, internal adjustment. Because how much power do you have? How much power do you have to change the politics? Right? How much power do you have to, you know, cure everyone? How much power do you have to create a good, yeah, I don't know, like a economical, sustainable thing, environment in the society? You can try, you can do your best, but how much you can do? But one thing we can do for certain is that we can adjust our internal environment. And by this, we change our vision to see everything differently. We can change and adjust our internal vision, our internal chakshush. And this is actually the true gift that Krishna gave to us. The internal adjustment. Prabhupada is speaking here about, in the purport, about the military strength. Increase of Asuric population, those who follow the principles of religion become unhappy, especially devotees or devas. Military strength. So you can see that In the times of the Mahabharata, there was a lot of millions and millions of soldiers fighting. But you see, their warfare was still somehow or another only between the soldiers. In today's warfare, what happens, who are the people which are more strict, kind of a more, yes, who are harmed by the warfare or by the military strength of different nations? It's the civilians. The civilians are actually always suffering. Whatever war comes, the civilians are suffering. But in the ancient times, it was only the soldiers we've been fighting. So Prabhupada speaks about military, he speaks about war. There's a true war happening since time immemorial, since we entered this material realm, the subtle warfare. The enemy has captured different strategic positions in the body of the conditioned soul. We are in war, and this war is happening for a very, very long time now. What are the three strategic points which the enemy captured within the body? Exactly. Indriyani mano buddhir asya dhisthanam uchyate etar vimohayati esha jnanam avritya dehinam. The senses, the mind and the intelligence are the sitting places of this lust which veils the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders him. So the lust is the true enemy of the living soul. Krishna says to Arjuna, cut this enemy which is pervading through the whole society, through you, cut this lust. And what happens? Then you can be actually true free. And if you want to understand and if you want to destroy the enemy, you have to know what are the positions of the enemy, where the enemy camps are. So it's the mind, the intelligence, and the senses. So in the modern age, we use like gross weapons, guns, bombs, and nuclear weapons. But they are very subtle and deceiving, and they know your weakness, and they will exploit it. So Prabhupada writes in the purport, in order to fill this ambition, the asuras, as I mentioned, the three kings, and the state executive has tried to equip themselves with all kinds of deadly weapons. Mind is the center of all activities of the senses, and thus the mind is the reservoir of all ideas of sense gratification. And as a result, the mind and the senses become the repositories of lust. Next, the intelligence department becomes the capital of such lust propensities. Intelligence is the immediate next-door neighbor of the spirit soul. So if you truly want to create a peace in the society, we have to start within us. And if you want to be happy, simple as that, because we are pleasure-seeking in our nature, the true happiness has to come from within. Is it such a sutra which has been around for such a long time? The happiness has to come from within. And if you adjust yourself, everything externally will come to place. The spirit soul becomes addicted to enjoying the material senses and mistakes this as a true happiness. So our mistake is the mistake of the false ego. Half past. Try to touch the point on this, just simply. So if there are any points or any questions, any comments, anything devotees wish to share with us now? Srinivas Prabhu?
You know what you said earlier about... You mentioned that earlier in the class, right? There's a Kork Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he gives a little insight on this. He says, a materialist is one who accumulates material objects for his own pleasure and who engages them as the ingredients of his sense gratification. One who accumulates material objects for the Lord's service is not a materialist but a devotee. It is not possible to differentiate between a material enjoyer and a devotee on the basis of the respective activities, but it is possible to differentiate it by studying the motivations of each. One who eats for personal sense gratification is a materialist. One who eats to maintain the body for Krishna's service is a devotee. A devotee is neither a material enjoyer nor a dry renunciant, but a servant of the Lord. A devotee engages wealth, material objects, everything in this world, in the Lord's service.
That was this was like angle from how devotees and asuras utilize the material nature. Yeah, so that's one angle of the difference. Thank you for that. Any other points? Any questions? Rasaraj Krishna Prabhu.
Intelligence is defined probably in the dictionary something, you know, to the material effect, but what would you say the actual understanding or the dictionary, spiritual dictionary definition of intelligence is?
How would you tell what is intelligence? Intelligence is still a tool. Intelligence is a tool to distinguish between good and bad, what is good for your spiritual life and what is not good for your spiritual life. And intelligence is that can be only purified by actually association with sadhus and with the shastra. So intelligence gives you intelligent answers based on your association. So if you associating with materialistic qualities, the intelligence will take materialistic nature and will give you materialistic suggestion. If you associate with spiritual activities, spiritual scriptures, then the intelligence will give you spiritual answers and spiritual suggestions. So same thing with the mind, same thing with the senses. It's all based on association. So intelligence is just a tool which help you to either liberate yourself or degrade yourself based on the association. Roberto Prabhu?
So you said that intelligence is kind of also a place of lust. So how to understand this, as you said, intelligence is, you know, to say what is good for is bad for us. So is this like that intelligence, when it's in pure state, is actually giving us reason why we should indulge in lust? Is this?
Can you repeat the question?
The question is, you said that lust is also in the intelligence.
Yes.
So how to understand it, because intelligence should be ones that kind of is, you know, how to extend it practically, how come?
Good point. As I mentioned before, the nature of the soul is pleasure seeking. So intelligence will be a tool to help you to seek that pleasure. Right? Just like that story that there was a prostitute and there was some kind of like a brahmana who was, it was a dead night, it was a massive storm, there were many, many rivers. And this brahmana was utilizing all the tools, he was utilizing different things to get to this prostitute for sense enjoyment. Therefore, he utilized also intelligence. So the intelligence helped him to actually cross from one point to the other point. So this means that the lust resides in intelligence, that the intelligence will help you to find that material sense gratification. And you will distinguish between this is a higher enjoyment, this is lesser enjoyment, and this is not so much enjoyment. Therefore, let me go for the highest enjoyment. That's what means that the lust resides in intelligence. So this unpurified intelligence will give you many different suggestions how to gratify yourself through lusty desires, through lust.
One more question. You said that we have this pleasure-seeking tendency, and how does this manifest in the spiritual world?
How does it manifest pleasure-seeking tendency?
Yeah, in the spiritual world.
Well, we wouldn't be here if there would be no pleasure in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, I mean, so there are some pastimes, right? Let's say, prasadam pastimes. Now and then, let's say, when I miss prasadam, like when I miss lunch or something, then I'm on the prasadam hunt. So my intelligence is helping me, okay, go to the back of the kitchen, have a look underneath the cupboard in the brahmachari ashram. Maybe there's something in the fridge. So intelligence will help you. And the pleasure-seeking tendency is dovetailed towards some spiritual activities. Or someone who's more elevated will be looking for, I don't know, some good books to read. And he will utilize the intelligence to find some good, attractive literature. Or where is this? I heard someone mention this beautiful pastime from Bhagavatam. Where is it mentioned? And you start using intelligence to seek for that specific pastime. Or use the intelligence, how can I serve my guru in the best way? So that pleasure is there. There's no other pleasure, no bigger pleasure, at least, that, let's say, I'm working on certain projects for my spiritual master, and I feel literally a pleasure when I can submit my project to him. And when he receives it and he gives me his feedback, there is pleasure in that. So I try to adjust my life accordingly so I can have that pleasure or facilitated his pleasure. And in this way, you can receive some pleasure as well. If that makes sense. Yen Munene Kanini Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Thank you so much for your class. Very, very nice class. I had a question as you were speaking about the materialists and their mentality. And when you look at the dynamics of the materialist and that of the spiritualist, the one common factor is the level of hope. The materialist is hoping that by making a particular calculation, something will manifest in the future. The spiritualist as well is hoping that by taking to this practice, by adjusting my sleeping time, inducing more austerities into my practice, I will ultimately achieve Krishna. Mm. So from a preaching perspective, how can we convince the materialists that the hope that they get in spiritual life is much more beneficial than that they hold on to in material practices?
Mm. That's a very profound, very nice question. First thing is that people have many times hope in like science, they have faith in materialistic lifestyle. So we can see in the present time that actually these hopes are getting shattered a bit. They had a lot of hope in governments, they have a lot of faith in scientists, they have a lot of hope in many different material activities. And somehow when the disturbances like this come, it shatters their faith. And you can even see atheists kind of in the moment of greatest desperation, they pray to God or they pray to some higher entity. So sometimes the change of hopes or change of faith requires some external stimuli or something when someone pokes you really, really much. I remember, you know, when in our own lives, that it takes a situation or event or a moment when our illusions of material life are slightly shattered. And those moments actually shift our hope and our faith to something else. So it is many different things for different people. But I would say, yeah, developing hope or faith in different type of knowledge, different types of society, and different types of environment, different types of consciousness. And that comes differently for other people. So I would say, yeah, slightly shattering the concepts of enjoyment, where you take your enjoyment from, if that makes sense. Hare Krishna. Any other points? Bishop Prabhu, you had your hands up. If not, then this is answered. So the question is, how come that the senses, the mind, and intelligence are all around the false ego, rather around this soul? How can we adjust that? But it's a simple answer, just by spiritual practice, by deprogramming yourself. You're just looking for the true self, and you do all the activities which nourish this true self, rather than the ahankar, the false ego. And you can feel and you can see the difference, right? The false ego is nourished by by name, fame, and adoration, right? You know, it helps you to build your false ego. But on the spiritual level, the better and servant you are, that brings more pleasure. I don't know if it makes sense. I think, yeah, rather to take shots of senior devotee.
Great happiness in giving me distress. That distress is the best one. Mm. actually, if we really get to that point, that's what our really Krishna is
strong. Shifting the happiness from us to others, that's where the true happiness lies. How was it that Shruti Dharma Prabhu, he had this quote, you know it, Mohan, the true happiness is to serve others or something like that. How was it? Do you remember? There was this one nice quote of how Shruti Dharma was living his life according to that quote. You lost yourself in service to others or something like that. Do you remember, Rasa Raj Prabhu?
You lose yourself.
Lose yourself in service of others.
You find yourself and you lose yourself in the service of others.
Yeah, something like that. Okay, thank you for tolerating me. Mala Purana Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki, Srila Prabhupada Ki, Gaura Bhaktavrinda Ki.